Morning, everybody. Let us begin learning today. I'd like to thank, we have three sponsors for today's shiur. I'd like to thank Dr. Moshe Boydek, who's sponsoring Lili Nishmas Avram Yitzchak ben Moshe Tzvi. His grandfather's yahrzeit is Boy Bayom. Also, today is the yahrzeit for Alexander Zisha ben Yechiel Halevi. That's Mr. Jack Siegel's father. Also, Boy Bayom. And we want to thank Dr. and Mr. Rochelle Yeager for sponsoring today's shiur, Lili Nishmas Yeshua ben Avram. That's Moshe's father. And also Lili Nishmas Brindel Bas Yisrael Aryeh. That's Rochelle's mother, whose yahrzeits are this coming week. Our limud should be a zechus for the respective mishpachos, and they should also, in return, also be melitzim yasharim for the mishpachos. We're not going to be doing meta halacha or quantum halacha today, but at certain points, you need to do regular physics to be able to appreciate quantum physics. So we're going to do regular halacha to appreciate quantum halacha.
Matter.
So
we can. Speaking to matter.
Yes. So we're gonna start. We're gonna start at the beginning. So yesterday we read a very interesting portion in the Torah. We read at the very end. Parashas Kisaitse is replete with mitzvahs. One could really go through the parasha and spend years just trying to pry open all the different parts of the Kisaitse. So in order to appreciate one little section, we're going to go to the very, very, very end. The end of the parasha tells us, this is in source 2, Lo yiyeh lecha b'chisecha even v'oven, gedola v'ktana. Don't have in your pockets, don't have in your storage, small and big stones. Small and big stones, why would you keep small and big stones? The Torah continues, Lo yiyeh lecha b'veischa eifa v'eifa, gedola v'ktana. Don't have these different types of measures, which are big and small. Be'even shleima v'tzedek yielach lach, eifo shleima v'tzedek yielach, leman yarichu yamecha al ha'adama shir Hashem lekecha nasein lach. You should have one set of measures, because in order that you have long life on the land that Hashem gave you, ki so'avas Hashem elokecha kol oisei ele kol oisei avel elizei. Disgrace to Hashem to do avel, this abomination. What is the problem with having big and small stones?
It's to report.
So let's just put ourselves back in those days, before the days of electronic scales and measuring systems. Well, the way they would do it is they would have a system of scales, and in order to measure, let's say there was a certain poundage or weight that you're going to be giving, you would have, the seller would have stones, measures that would be on the one side of the scale, and whatever he's selling, be it, let's say, flour, whatever else it is by the weight, would go on the other side and it would be exact. So if you had big and small stones, it means that for different customers, there would be different amounts they ended up getting, right? Similar things, an A4 is like a container. So there's a certain container. So what happens if one of the containers was just a little smaller? It wasn't exactly the golden mean. And so different customers got different measures. So that's what the Torah is saying, is make very, very sure that you have good measures. Similarly, actually, if we reverse to Vayikra, in Parashat Kedoshim, which is the other sort of sister parasha to Kisaitse, in terms of the Beit Olam L'Chavera components of mitzvahs, Kedoshim also has an interesting way of describing it in Vayikra Yotes, Lo Yisasu Ovel Bamishpot, don't do, the same word is being used here, Ovel, which is unrighteousness. They translate it here, Bamida, Bamishkal, Bamishura, whether it be in the way you measure things, whether it's the length or weight or mida. You should have all these weights should all be righteous. I am going to took you out of Egypt. You should do all my commandments. So the question which should really be the first thing we think about when looking at this is, meaning the Torah is telling us that you should always have honest measures. What's the problem with this whole? What's the problem with the whole concept in the first place?
It's included in the signet.
Right. So, meaning the Torah has told us pretty explicitly that the Torah says that there's a prohibition to steal. So, therefore, the Torah shouldn't have to tell me all the particulars of how you steal. The Torah should just say, "Don't steal," and then in all ramifications, in all circumstances, don't steal. It's like, you know, there's a Gemara that talks about. Rabbi Yochanan was talking about in the Gemara different ways that people would cheat each other, and he said at a certain point, "I don't know if I want to say this because you know what's going to end up happening is people give people great ideas and they'll start using this." And so, in the end of the day, he actually resolved that he should say it because it's tzaddikim yelchubam, poishlim yekoshlubam. That, you know what, I have to say today, we understand the legal system, and, you know, unfortunately, the flip side is going to be is that people will learn from it, but I can't not, right? But in the end of the day, the Torah doesn't need to explicate every single case of stealing. Just say, don't steal, and that's it. Gehendik, finished. That's the end. But the Torah seems to be telling us something else, which means that therefore we don't fully understand this mitzvah if we have that question. Right? We need to understand how this mitzvah operates independently of theft, because otherwise the Torah wouldn't have said it. There's also simply another way to get to theft. So what really is the mitzvah? That's where we have to start. That's the starting point. So the Gemara actually asks exactly this question. The Gemara says in the source 4, Gemara Bava Metzia, this is on Samach Aleph from Beis, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yemar, or Rav Ashi, Rabbi Yemar would say to Rav Ashi, Lav dekosav rachmona b'mishkolo eslamali. Why do I need an independent iser to prevent me having, you know, unbalanced weights? Amalei letoymen b'mishkolo eslav b'melach. So he says, you know what it's talking about? It's talking about a person who soaks his measuring cups in salt. What's going to happen?
It's going to swell with water.
But they're going to absorb a little more. So therefore, they're going to, when you measure, they're going to be just incrementally smaller inside. And they look the same. They're the same ones you bought at Costco. But nonetheless, your ones are not giving the same amount of flour when the person's measuring, right? So that's what the Gemara says. That's ad kedei kach. How far it goes. The Gemara asks his question, which is, he says, Hainu gezel ma'al yahu. That's just good old thievery. That's just good old cheating. So why does the Torah need to tell me that? So the Gemara answers, he says, La'avor alav mishas asiyah. Wow. The Gemara is telling us that there is an independent yisur, irrespective of theft, which is even owning stones or weights or measuring equipment, which is incorrect, which is not calibrated. That is unbelievable. Meaning, when we read the section of the Torah is not talking about using it. Where's the proof, by the way, that this Gemara is correct? Right, so the Gemara says, the way the Torah says it, it phrases it in one place is, don't make it, and the other one is, lo yelecha. The verbs that the Torah uses isn't using. The verb the Torah uses is, don't even make, and don't even own. Right? So I mean to say, there is an additional prohibition. It's almost like what this might be, what is known as, what's called a geder midoraisa almost. It's like the Torah is putting a fence around itself. This is not the Rabbanon making a fence. The Torah itself is preventing you from getting to the next stage, which is what it's saying.
Why should you say that's covered on the Lifnei
Iver? What was that?
Why shouldn't that be covered on the Lifnei Iver, just like the other parts covered on the Gezel?
Lifnei Iver. Well, Lifnei Iver is where you're doing an action which allows another person to do something bad. Here, what you're doing is that you're doing something which is going to actually affect somebody now. Right? They're going to lose out. Right, so it's a little different, but it's sort of in the same line of thievery. Just over here, it's much more. We sort of pulled it back to a stage where you can't even get to the stage where you're going to use it. So you can't even keep it in your closet just because you know, like you like to do magic tricks to the kids at you know after supper, you know, so like that kind of thing. It's disallowed. That's what the Gemara says. However, it's interesting to know that this is the question which has bothered all the Mefarshim across the ages, and. So he has an example of somebody who answers it a little differently. The Sefer HaChinuch, which is attributed to Rav Aaron HaLevi, again, it's hard to know exactly who if it was him or not, but he what he does is, again, the Sefer HaChinuch, the way it's constructed is he lists all the 613 mitzvahs. It's actually an essay he wrote to his son as an education tool, and so he goes through each mitzvah and he explains the background of it, the dinim, the sharashim, which is the reasons, and then the applications of it. So he says the following when listing this mitzvah, which he lists in mitzvah Reish Nun Ches, which is in Vayikra. Interestingly, he brings it the earlier part. He says in source 5, Shaloi lohonos b'midos halach v'yavesh v'lo b'maznaim. So you can't cheat with these different types of measures, whether it be dry or wet measures. V'chlal midos hu gam ken medidas hakarkois. Similarly, let's say you have a ground measuring tool, right? So let's say you're a contractor and you're going to work on land. You also maybe make sure that your measuring tools are up to scratch. It means that even if you're, let's say you sell cloth, any type of measuring tool you have needs to be calibrated. He quotes the Gemara of Amitziah. Kimeshura himira salach vayavesh vihimira katan of yoser shehi echad mila elam egil and belug. So he goes on to explain what the difference between these different words in the pasuk were based on that Gemara, which was mishkal mida and meshura. Okay, then he says the following comments. V'lamadu mikan, we know from here ki haTorah hikpida al amidos b'chol shehu. The Torah is actually makpid on any amount of thievery which takes place. Kolomar shavopi shebeshas kzelus loy hikpid haTorah ela b'pruta. When it comes to theft, what is the minimum bar to enter theft is if you steal the shavet pruta. So that's the Midrash was commenting in the times of Noach. What they were doing was they were always stealing like half a pruta, just below the sort of the bench press. He says, however, b'inyan hamidos sikpid takpid b'chol shehu. So, but when it comes to measuring, the Torah is saying that it's even b'chol shehu, even a nothing of a nothing is a problem. What is the Sefer HaChinuch essentially saying? What is he saying over here? How is it that this parasha over here distinguishes itself from theft? So theft has a particular measure. Whereas when it comes to weights,
it's a more stringent
criteria for entering into it. So therefore, it's interesting the way it looks like he's understanding it over here, is that when it comes to theft, you only enter into that category once you've actually got a certain measure, when you've actually stolen a certain amount of money or worth of money. Whereas it comes to the measures, you could be chayav for transgressing lo sasu avel b'mishpat in this parasha. Even before you enter into that category. So according to this logic, let's just pull this out fully. What would happen then when you are above the Shavei Pruta? So therefore, how many Surim you transgress then? So you would say they're both. Meaning, you would have theft and Lo Sa'asu Avel Bamishpat of distorting your system of measures. But the uniqueness of this mitzvah is to be found, not where it overlaps, but where it is before even the stage of measuring, which is less than a Shavei Pruta. That's the way he views it. Which means that he's presenting a different uniqueness to this mitzvah than the Gemara, right? The Gemara had said that this mitzvah is unique in the sense that it is even owning it or perhaps even making it. Whereas he is saying, no, it's not about the making stage, it's about using it, but when you use it, it is already in effect below a Shavei Pruta. That's the way that he understands it. Okay, so it is a sort of an overlay to Gezel, the way he's looking at it, which overlaps just a little longer, a little more than Gezel actually does itself. Fascinating. The problem with this is. What was that? Right. So first of all, the Torah has specific measurements for different areas of halacha, which are what's called halacha l'Moshe miSinai, which we know there's a certain tradition from Moshe from Sinai what the measurements are. So number one, number two is like he seems to be going a little. How can you ignore the Gemara? You know, meaning the Gemara's told us where it applies, and he's saying no, it applies elsewhere. Listen to the way the Minchas Chinuch, the Pirush on the Sefer HaChinuch questions this. He says the following. Binyan Amidos, he says, Davos Echidoshu. He quotes the Sefer HaChinuch. He says, this is a nice way of saying, he's concerned about this. He says, this is very unique, right? This is a very unique idea that he's presenting. But it isn't clear. But Rambam, Uveshas, because if you read through the regular halachic discourse that has gone that has been up till now at this stage in history, v'gabe geneva v'agzela kosa ramam da goizel shavet pruta over beloisase v'chein beperik alef milchus geneva v'chein gzeras hakos v'gabe mamon ki ashurim halacha l'moshim in Sinai sorry shir shavet pruta pachus mizeh eno elo chatzi shir. So he says, look, we know that there's certain measurements. The Torah tells us that for theft there is the shir is a pruta, which by the way is not so much. It's really not a lot of money. But nonetheless, the Torah says that when you steal, the oral tradition to the Torah explains that stealing is at a Shavei Pruta. And that's a Shavei Pruta is usually the benchmark for a lot of different things. However, says, where are you getting this from? You're telling me now that the Torah is now mandating an Isur, which isn't limited by any shir. Where do you get that from? The Rambam never talks about that. When he goes on further, he says, Ayin Rambam, 1 second, I just lost the place here. He says, "Ayin Ram." In the second line, and he says, "Look at the Rambam Magabi Gzeilah v'Kaneva v'Kan Loi Kosov b'Feirush to Samach Adal El v'Chein Kan b'Valet Sorek Shiyeh Shavet Prutalinian Haloi Taase Azeva b'Pagos Eno Rak Isur Torah." He says, "You can't tell me that this is a punishable. This is where it comes down to it. You may be able to tell me that it's asur. Of course it's asur to steal less than a shalei prota. But you can't tell me that it's now you've transgressed and it's punishable below that. Right? You can't tell me that's prosecutable. If it is like the Rav HaMechaber, who's he referring to? The Chinuch. The Rav HaMechaber is the person who's the author. So that's how he denotes the Sefer HaChinuch. Chidsha Torah de'af b'pachus mishalei prota. You're telling me that you've transgressed this with one grain of salt. When the Gemara in Bava Metzia said, why do we need this unique parasha? And you're telling me, Sefer HaChinuch, that in this particular parasha, it is now prosecutable, and you could get Malkus even, for having even stolen one grain of salt or rice, which is less than a shalei prota. What should the Gemara have said? The Gemara said, that's the difference. The Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says, no, it's about ownership. You shouldn't own them. It's clear, not only is it not found in the Rambam, but it seems like the Gemara is ignoring that possibility. Right? It sounds like the Gemara is ignoring the possibility that there should be a prosecutable isur below a shalei prota. How does this work, says the Sefer HaChinuch? So in order to understand this, perhaps we'll go into the words of Evan HaEzel, one of the beautiful Pirushim, Rabbi Yisrael Melzer on the Rambam, and he says a very interesting thing, and he says the basic logic is the following. What we need to do is let's start actually with an interesting. Before we get there, let's start with an interesting sifra. The sifra is the Midrash Halacha, which is to be found on Sefer Vayikra. It's the Sifrei when it comes to Bamidbar and Devarim, and it's the Sifra when it is on Vayikra. So the Sifra makes a comment on this parasha. It's in source 3. We're just going to do the first three lines. He says, "Lo yisasu avel b'mishpat." The Torah tells us, "Don't pervert justice." Im ladin kvar hadin amur. Im kain lama ne'emar lo yisasu avel b'mishpat b'midav mishura. So the Sifrop makes an interesting point. He says, why is this whole area called Mishpat, judgment? Meaning, this is what's happening in your store, right? And it depends how you're dispensing your products. Why is this about don't do Avel in Mishpat, in judgment? What's judgment got to do with what goes on in your store? So Sifrop says implicitly, what's the Torah telling us? The Torah is telling us that you ultimately are considered a judge in your own store. Why? Because the way you measure your products is up to you, so that adjudication process makes you a judge. So therefore the Torah says, in your judgment, when you're sitting there, so to speak, as the judge of this case that's in front of you, make sure that just like a judge should not distort justice, you shouldn't distort the justice of your transaction. That's the way the Sifra looks at it from the language of the Torah. Okay? So that's, in fact, the way that Rav Hirsch says it, just to drive this in a little further, very beautifully said. If you just take a look on page 6, the very top of the page 6 for a moment, just appreciate how Rav Hirsch phrases this, and then we'll come back to our Evan, our Ezel. It's in the very top source in English there. He says, starting from the middle of the paragraph on the left, he says, towards the middle, it says rather, is the middle of a sentence. He says, rather, the Torah regards the very possession of measures and the very act of measuring as acts of mishpat. Every measure owned by a Jew, any material measured out by a Jew, becomes a Jewish act of mishpat, a symbol of Jewish respect for justice. Thus the Torah represents justice itself in its most absolute form, as a sanctuary to be kept inviolate by every Jew. The Torah's will is that a sense of justice, respect of justice, and honesty be basic character traits of the Jewish nation. Okay, so the Torah is empowering us in the judgment process and says, therefore, as we do that, we need to adjudicate carefully. Okay, he's extending the notion of the Sifra, what the Rav Hirsch is doing over here. So let's take this further and try to blend it into what we've said over here. The Evan HaEzel, so Rav Yisrael Zalman says the following in source 7. He says, "Vanira bazeh tekevon de ikar iso de mishkalos hu b'shas shemoided o sheshoikel ki dichsiv lo yisasu avel b'mishpat." When is it occurring that a person's cheating? Has the transaction actually occurred at the point of measuring? The answer is usually not. Usually what happens is like, let's say, you remember the days we used to go to the store, and before you used to, before you, let's say vegetables and the products you put in bags. It used to be that you had to actually measure them there and then bag them and seal them. Remember that?
Yeah.
And now it's all done at the cash register, right? But what would happen is you come to the store before you're going to get your products and pay for it. What would end up happening is you'd measure it all up and then you'd sort of seal it and you get the container and that's what you do. So, meaning, the at the time of measuring, no transaction has actually occurred yet. V'darshu chazal b'sifra v'chein hu b'sefer ha-mitzvos shamoided nikra dayan. That's why you're a judge, because at this point in time, it's not actually a cash transaction. It's simply judging how much is in this container, how much you're actually getting. V'im kein, lo idomikan ledin gezel, de'eno chai v'tashumi v'pachus mishome pruta. What's going on if you take a snapshot of this stage of the game? This is not a financial transaction at all. There's nothing happened yet. You're simply in the area of the store where you're measuring. So he says, oh, and therefore it's not subject to the limitations of Gezel. And the time you're measuring, you haven't stolen yet. So he goes on to say the following interesting thing. He says that it may even be that this is a lav hanitan letashlumim, which means, let's say, you measure and you falsely measure. You give him a little less, your customer, a little less than he should really be getting. But then what you do is you lower the price later on. So you've averted, right? You've averted the money loss, right? Because you gave him a dollar lower because you realized you felt bad and conscious, you gave him the wrong tools. Would you have been over this iser? The answer is yes. Even if ultimately there was no financial loss to the customer, because you measured incorrectly, because the iser over here exists before the transaction has taken place. That's what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara of Avmasiyah is saying that when it comes to measuring, that's the time where you're the dayan. It's before any financial transaction. At such a place, the Torah is saying there's an iser because it's before the financial actual transaction takes place. It's not limited to the regular scope of financial measurements. Which means to say, what do you see what Eben Ezra is saying over here? He's saying that the Sefer HaChinuch's releasing of this iser from the we'll call it, the parameter of Shaveh Pruta, is as an outcome of the fact that it isn't at the Shas transaction. It isn't at the time where there's a financial transaction going on. Of course it's not limited to Shaveh Pruta because it's before the Shaveh Pruta is even involved. Therefore, the question of the Sefer HaChinuch, the Minchas Chinuch disappears. The Sefer HaChinuch is simply extrapolating the same idea that the Gemara is saying, which is why it's not limited to Shaveh Pruta.
Can I just rephrase this?
Yeah, sure.
My understanding is it's an independent, separate transaction that has to have its own honesty about it. So if I walk into a store and I say I want 2 pounds of potatoes, and you give me 1 pound and 7/8, it's your obligation to say this is 1 pound and 7/8.
Correct.
Is that okay with you?
Correct.
And only then, and I have to understand that if not okay, just to charge me with something, but you have to actually tell me how much.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a separate, independent.
Exactly, and this now brings into distinction how the Gemara and the Sefer HaChinuch work together, right? Because this has nothing to do with actual loss. It's actually to do with the honesty of the interaction. That's what seems to be going on over here. And that's why the Sifra, therefore, understands that this is where you are become a dayan. If you think back to Rav Hirsch's words, what's this telling us over here? If you think about deeply about what's going on over here, that the Torah is not telling us over here that it wants to protect society. You see that? Well, what's the Torah doing now? The Torah is ultimately educating a nation. It's educating a character. Right, so as you said, Barry. So in the way that it's being expressed is the way you speak has to be absolutely incandescently honest with people, irrespective of what's going to happen afterwards. That's what the Torah seems to be marked on here. That's beyond financial limits and numbers.
Right. It's not the behavior of theft; it's the perversion of justice.
Exactly. Exactly. And the beauty of it is saying, and this is justice. You see, if we are living in a utilitarian society, what we'd say is, as long as nobody's hurt. Right, as long as society is protected. And the answer to the Torah is that's not the way the type of society that we're trying to generate. You see the beauty of what's going on here? Let's take it one step further. Let's take it into a realm that perhaps we wouldn't have thought of. The Gemara has an unbelievable application of this. The Gemara says in a very different line of thought. Let's take a look at this. This Gemara is in Bava Metzia Memtes Amud Aleph. This Gemara over here is talking about what's fondly known as Mi Shepara. Mishapara is a very serious thing. Mishapara means Mishapara Midara Mabul or Dara Flogger, that Hashem who paid, who had exacted justice from the generation of the flood and the generation of the Dara Floga is going to exact justice on people who do terrible things. It's a type of curse. Okay, it's called Mishapora, pretty heavy-duty stuff. It is applied generally to a person who reneges on a transaction when they've already put down money on it. So, let's say a person says, you know, I'm going to commit to this, he puts down the money, but there hasn't been a real official kinyan beyond kesef, and then they renege on the transaction, they retract the money. So in that such a case, the Gemara says a person that is in such cases is, well, obviously, of course, there's limitations and parameters, but the person is subject to a Mishapora, very heavy stuff. So the Gemara then asks the following question, the Gemara in Baba Siyah, says the following question. Here's the case in source 8. Rav Kahana, Yavi le Zuze Akitna. So Rav Kahana was apparently used to sell kitna, flax, and what happened was that people put a down payment on for a certain amount of his product. Lasof Yakir Kitna, but at the end of the day, what happened was, before they collected, then the price of his product went up, which means that people got a good price on his product. So he wanted to know now if he really has, if he has to now give them the original amount with the money, which is now should be actually more money now for the same amount amount of product. Also, the comment to Rav, he came in front of Rav, who was one of the earlier Tanaim. He was a bridge character between the Tanaim and the Amoraim. Okay, so an early Amora end of the Tanaim period. Amalei b'mai d'nakita zuzi haviluhu. The amount, so let's say, you know, they ordered, let's say, like 10 pounds of kitna, and they put down $10. And now it happens to be that kitna is now worth 12, okay, so for argument's sake. So he wants to know what to do. So Rav says, you have to give, in today's market, you have to give them $10 worth of kitna, okay? And Rashi points out, or otherwise you actually are entering into the grounds of Mishapora, because you're reneging on a financial commitment. However, v'idach, the remaining amount, okay, so because now the $10 is not buying as much in today's kitna, the remaining amount, you don't have to, devarim ninu v'devarim ein bohem eshum mechusrei amona. That was only a, we'll call it a verbal agreement, and a verbal agreement doesn't constitute a what's called mechusrei amona, that you're acting without emuna, without faithfulness to your transaction. So you're allowed to do that, says Rav. So the Gemara now sort of contextualizes what this is about, because actually there was an argument about this particular concept to Itmar. It was said, Devarim, what happens if a person makes a commitment only verbally, without any money, without any kinyanim? Rav Omar, Ein Bohem Meshum Mechus Ramona, there's no real loss of faithfulness in this, in terms of your word. By the way, this Rav is not recommending anything over here, just so we should be aware. We're talking about, Have you transgressed Mechus Re'emona? He says, Rav Yochanan Omar, Yesh boy Mishum Mechus Re'emona. Rav Yochanan said there was, in fact, a transgression of Yav Mechus Re'emona. So there's a difference of opinion, Rav and Rabbi Yochanan on this. And of course, who was Rav Kahana asking? Rav, which is why Rav says, Ein boy Mishum Mechus Re'emona in this particular case. Now, the Gemara asks the question, Meisivei, Rabbi, this swings round to us now. Rabbi Yossi b'Rab Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yossi in the name of Rabbi Yehuda would say, Ma Talmud Leimar, what does the Pasuk say in Vayikra, Hin Tzedek? Remember, a hin is a measurement, right? So the Torah emphasizes Eifas Tzedek, right? There's all these different measurements. One of the words that he uses is Hin Tzedek. It should be a Hin Tzedek. What does that mean? It says, V'aloi Hin Bichlal Eifah Haya. Hin is not a subcategory of the measurement of an Eifah. So the Torah has told me that I need to have an Eifas Tzedek. Of course I need to have a Hin Tzedek. The Gemara continues to say, "Ela lo malacha sheyehei hein shelach tzedek, v'lav shelach tzedek." The word "hein" doesn't only mean a particular measure; "hein" also means yes. So, what is the Torah actually implicitly suggesting? That your yeses should be righteous, and your noes should be noes. Meaning, when you say something, you should live by your word. So, what's the Gemara doing over here?
Verbal commitment.
Ah, so the Gemara is saying over here that when we read this parasha of righteous measures, it's not simply what you keep in your drawer, it's what you keep in your mouth. Right? It's how you speak. Even your speech needs to be exact. Tzedek. It can't be too cloudy. Right, so now, what's this statement of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda is a question on whom? This is a question on Rav. Because remember, we have two opinions. Rabbi Yochanan says, yes, this is a Mechus Re'emona. You should not be doing this. Rav says, well, not technically speaking, this is a problem. Our parasha seems to say that it is a transgression of Hin Tzedek to go back on your word. So Amar Abaye says no. Hahu shelo yedaber ach echad bepev echad belev. When is Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda saying this statement that your yes should be a yes is at the moment of transaction? Meaning, we're making a commitment over here, and I say, and at this time I'm saying, you know what? I'm going to sell you the cotton. I'm gonna sell it to you. But in your mind, you're saying, haha, I'm going to change my mind. Don't worry, I'm going to get him. Right? At that point in time, that's what the hin shelcha tzedek means. Your yes needs to be yes when you're saying it. What happens if circumstances changed afterwards? Prices went up, prices changed. Maybe then, in that case, like Rav says, there's no problem with mechusra amona, right? It's only at the time that you're actually saying it. So what has Abaye done? Abaye has limited the scope of the hin tzedek, your yes, your righteous yes. Okay, so to release Rav to be able to say what he says. That's what the Gemara continues to say. One last fact, and then we're going to think about this a little bit further. And the Gemara goes on a few lines later and says, Mi Omar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi, does Rabbi Yochanan really say this? Rabbi Yochanan was the one who said that even a verbal reneging is mechusre amona, is like you're being dishonest. So he says, how could he say such a thing? Rabbi Yochanan is quoted as having said, a person says, you know, Bob, I love you so much, I'm going to give you a present. The next day he says, you know, Bob, I don't love you so much, I'm not going to give you a present. So can you do that or not? So the Rabbi Yochanan says, yeah, that's fine. But wait a second, wasn't Rabbi Yochanan the one who says that even verbal commitments are really real commitments? How could you go back? So the Gemara answers and says, no. Yochol pshita, he says, Ela mutar lachzor boy. The Gemara adjusts, he doesn't mean you should, it just means you're allowed to. Omer Papa, umoider b'yochanan b'matana mu'etas to samcha datayu. So Rabbi Yochanan, even the one Rabbi Yochanan who says that verbal commitments are really, really, really something, Rabbi Yochanan would say that when it comes to a matana mu'etas, that a person is locked in. But let's say a person, when he said to Bob that he's giving him a present, he was actually talking about a Porsche. And then the next day he goes back. So that's fine because, you know, he didn't really, you know, when you said verbally, he didn't really mean that. He just means he really likes Bob. You know, it doesn't mean he really wants to give him the Porsche. So when it came to a sharpener, that's fine. When he says, I'm going to give you a sharpener, Bob, that he definitely meant. When it came to something which you need to take a mortgage on, he probably didn't mean that. That's what the Gemara suggests over here. So what do we do la halacha? How does this express itself la halacha? Because this is now, let's try to bring this into full clarity. So the first place we look in la halacha, who's the first halachic decisor on the Gemara? The Rif, Rabbeinu Yitzhak, Rav Yitzhak Alfasi. Okay, so the reason why is it called Alfasi? Because he lived in a place called Fez. Okay, Fez in Morocco. It doesn't work as well if you say Alfasi, but some people do. But he lived in Fez. He lived in Morocco. He was the greatest halachic decisor of the time. What he did was he lived at the end of the period of the Gaonim, and what he did essentially was he went through the Gemara and he distilled the Gemara into halachic segments. Okay, so when you open a Gemara at the beginning, you usually have what looks like Gemara and there's Mefarshim on the side. You go to the back of the Gemara, it looks like it's the Gemara all over again. That's the Rif at the back. But he's essentially summarizing the sugyas, and sometimes he'll quote the Gemara word for word, but he'll only include the areas that are important. That part that's la halacha. And he became the first codifier la halacha. Different from the way the Rambam did it. The Rambam did it interestingly enough. The Rambam took out all the ideas and recalibrated them into a new system of logic, right? The 14 books of the Yad. He said, no, the Rif said, I'm going to go on the page of the Gemara. I'm going to sort of distill it into its halacha. And became the first book which does this. So interestingly enough, take a look at the in source 10. This is how the Rif codifies this Gemara. He says, Itmar Dvarim, regarding words. Rav Omar Enboy Mishum Chusra Amona, Rabbi Yochanan Omar Yeshboy Mishum Chusra Amona. There's the machlokes of Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. So he quotes like a more verbatim. Vav Rabbi Yochanan Le Omar Eleba Matana Mu'etes Mishum to Samcha Date, Abu Matana Muruba Loi Samcha Date Loi. He quotes the end of the Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan is only referring to things where you can actually make a commitment, like smaller gifts, bigger things, that there might be a suffix where he really meant that, then he does not say there's a problem of violating. V'hilchasa, the halacha is, this is now the Rif speaking, up to now he quoted the Gemara. V'hilchasa, ka Rabbi Yochanan, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, and then he quotes the Brisa, Tana Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Matam Olema, V'hin Tzedek, V'alai Hin Bechlal Eifar, Ela, Sheyehein Shelcha Tzedek, V'lav Shelcha Tzedek, U'pir Shabaye, Shelo Yedaber, Achas Bepeva, Achas Balev. He then quotes the Brisa, which is that your yes should be yes, your no should be no, And as Abaya understands that Brisa, that that's referring to at the time that you're making the commitment, you should be absolutely 100% absolute in your commitment. Right? So what's the problem with the framework of the Rif here for a moment? Let's just think about this logically. What's the problem with the way the Rif frames the Salacha? This shir requires a lot of thinking caps. So what's the problem over here? Let's just recap for a moment. This brisa of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, which links to our pasuk of Hin Tzedek, of your yes being righteous, was used in what implement in the Gemara? Well, how did the Gemara use this brisa? It was used as a.
It is Musar,
but it was used very seriously.
But it's more. Not the primary derivation of what you're doing this for.
Okay, it seems to be like an addition, right?
Right. The main thing is that you have honest weights and measures, not the primary halacha that you learn. It's an add-on. It's an extra. It's like a
right. So
it's a general guideline.
It sounds like, but even though it's a general guideline and it's Muslim, the Gemara used it very specifically. Who did the Gemara use it to attack? That's what, let's just remember for a moment. The Gemara used this brisa to attack. Right, so there was machlokes. Rav says verbal commitments aren't worth as much. Rabbi Yochanan says they're worth a lot. Right, that's the in very layman, like, you know, I don't think Rav would agree with the way we're translating that, but Rav is a little less concerned about verbal commitments than Rabbi Yochanan is. Okay? We brought this brisa as an attack on Rav, right? Because this brisa seems to be saying that verbal commitments hin shelcha tzedek. Good. So this brisa is therefore on the side of whom? On Rabbi Yochanan, which is good, because he paskins like Rabbi Yochanan. But then how did Rav escape this brisa? How did Rav dodge the bullet from this brisa? Well, who helped him out?
Abaya.
Was Abaya. Abaya limited this brisa to being only at the time of transaction, you meaning you need to be really, really true about your commitment when you're making your commitment. Thereafter, if factors change afterwards, like Rav Kahana's Kitna story, then Rav would be more makil because that, right, so he's limited the scope of this brisa. Abaya has essentially freed Rav. So therefore, the Rif should not be quoting Abaye, right? The Rif is just finished saying, Rabbi Yochanan, right? Your words mean something. So what should the Rif have said? Quote this brisa, Yohin shelcha, hein shelcha, hein, love shelcha, love, and end there. Full stop, period. That should be the end of it. What does the Rif go on to say? He quotes Abaye. Well, what's Abaye doing over there? Abaye was the limiting clause in the brisa to help Rav, that doesn't help us. That's inconsistent with the logic of the Gemara. That's what the Baal HaMa'or asks. Rav Zerachia Alevi. Rav Zerachia Alevi wrote a commentary on the Rif, at the bottom of the Rif, and he called it Baal HaMa'or. He wrote it at a very young age, at the age of 17, and he criticized the Rif across Shas in numerous cases, which got many, many people upset, including the Ravid and the Ramban. They felt that this young upstart was not supposed to be I'm not supposed to be criticizing the greatest halachic decisor who opened the gates into the halachic world of codifying the Gemara. And so the Ramban wrote a book which he labeled in no uncertain terms called Milchamos Hashem, the War of God. And it was essentially a defense of the Rif, but more poignantly, it was also an attack on the attacker. So the Ramban spares no words in his attacks on the Baal HaMa'or. It would be very fascinating to go across Shas to see how the two of them spar. And he says the following thing. Let's just do the Ramban. We'll skip the Baal HaMa'or because we thought about it outside. In source 12, he says, Omar HaKosev, the writer writes. Okay, so he says, Daita Kalishta, he's got a very weak mind in this. Kochazino Hacha, Tekevanda Sikna B'matona B'meruba, Loi Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Loi Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Kasha Brisa Dekra Dichsiv Henshel Choyeh Tzedek. Says the Ramban. Let's think about this for a moment. Rabbi Yochanan has told us that your word needs to be your commitment. Good. But Rabbi Yochanan also has a limitation. What does Rabbi Yochanan say? If you're giving over, if you promise to give Bob a Porsche, then you can't really go back on a verbal commitment. It's only when you give him when you commit to him verbally to give him the sharpener. Right? Wait a second. That brisa which says you hain shelcha hain and love shelcha love, your word is your commitment, doesn't seem to have any asterisks attached to it. Doesn't seem to have any fine print at the bottom which says, you know what, when it comes to big cars, it's fine. Doesn't say that. So how does Rabbi Yochanan actually swallow that brisa in the first place? What must Rabbi Yochanan need? He must need somebody who's going to dilute that brisa. Who can help dilute the brisa for us? Abaya. So meaning, even Rabbi Yochanan himself needs to put a disclaimer on that brisa of your verbal commitment, meaning it can't be true that at all stages, without exception, hein shel gal hein, that your commitment is your commitment, because even Rabbi Yochanan agrees that there's limitations to that.
Rabbi is a very more deluded than Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan,
yes, you're right.
A limitation to a
you're right. You're absolutely right.
As opposed to a business transaction.
You're right, and that's where the Baal HaMor comes in. You're right. You're absolutely right. So how does this work? Where, if we just zone in. Where is the Nekudas HaMachlokes? Where is the moment of departure between the Baal HaMor and the Ramban? So fascinating, yes? Well, the one way of looking at it is the following, which is just very, very... Rav Zsolti has a book called Mishnas Yavetz, which is a very, very fascinating sefer, and he says a very interesting thing. And he says, when we look at the sugya, this is why we need to like sort of... We've been talking about the what's. We haven't really analyzed the whys. Okay, meaning Rabbi Yochanan says verbal commitments are commitments. Rav says your verbal commitment is not a commitment. They have this brisa which they're contending with, which seems pretty absolute. Abaye seems to be diluting this brisa to some degree. Why? What's going on over here? Why are words? Why is your commitment worth so much? So maybe the Baal HaMor and the Ramban are trying to understand the significance and the gravity of a commitment. Perhaps the Baal HaMor understands that, in fact, the reason why your verbal commitment is so important is because, in fact, it is actually a form of kinyan. Meaning, when I've said something to you, and I commit, I say, you know, I'm going to give you X, Y, Z tomorrow, I've essentially already said, in some manner or another, I've actually made a kinyan, I've made a transaction for you, okay, to you. Whereas the Ramban understands it's not a transaction, it's just about your faithfulness, is about your word. It's not, we haven't made any transaction, there's not been, it's just simply your word. So how does this express itself? Let's think about the logic of the Baal HaMor. The Baal HaMor says, if it's true that this acts as a kinyan, then Rabbi Yochanan is saying the following: your word is your kinyan, it is your transaction tool, even on a microscopic level. Which makes sense why Rabbi Yochanan, he would agree, when it comes to big presents, whenever it comes to big gifts, I can go back. Because if my word is my tool, do I really intend to acquire to you, to bequeath to you, a really large present? And the answer is, probably not. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan's logic in and of itself explains his own limitation. Rabbi Yochanan understands that words are commitments as transactions, as a kinyan. But that, of course, only makes sense when, logically, we would understand that you are willing to make that transaction in the first place. If you're promising me the Empire State Building, it's pretty clear that that wasn't a commitment or a kinyan. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan in and of himself explains his own limitation. You don't need Abaye to explain the brisa. Of course, Rabbi Yochanan himself explains himself. But if you're going to say that, like the way the Ramban understands it, that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, no, it's not about kinyanim transactions, it's just about being honest. You've got to be an honest person. And if you're an honest person, whatever you say always goes, then why should that make a difference whether it's a big present or a small present? You said it. You actually uttered those words. If your words mean something, and you've got to respect your words, therefore why should a big present make a difference? Which is why the Rabban says, that's why the Rif is quoting Abaye. Because you need to limit the brisa. There's no other way to explain Rabbi Yochanan's limitation of big and small presents. You see what's going on over here? This is, by the way, this year is moving into just the realm of Lomdus. This is a very beautiful way of looking at what seems to be a nitty-gritty argument between the Baal HaMor and the Ramban. Is what's going on over here? What does your word mean? How are you supposed to reflect it and respect it?
How does the Ramban limit the impact of Abaya on the words of Rabbi Yochanan to Matana? That's my question.
How does, again,
that door... then that door even impacts on business transactions, which does not seem to be part of Rabbi Yochanan. The Abaye door open up business transaction. How does the Ramban understand that as being limited only to Matana?
Very interesting question. Well, it seems like Rabbi Yochanan was actually more than Matana. The example he gives is Matana of his limitation. It would have to be in all business transactions as well.
It's not an issue.
There's no difference in Rav.
Rav would say, even without a matana merubah, he would say even a matana mu'etas, one could be getting out of that. Right? Rather than the kitzna of Rabbi Yochanan.
The only difference between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav is matana mu'etas.
Correct. Yeah. But that's absolutely. And that's, which, by the way, is most transactions.
But
But this transaction with the initial transaction was the flax transaction, the kitna.
Correct.
The kitna is not a matana, it's a business transaction.
You're right.
And Rav Yochanan disagree.
Correct. I would assume that the fact that I would assume that matana and transaction work in the same way over here because the question is about a verbal commitment. So Rav Yochanan's limitation in matana, I would assume, is going to transfer over to even small commitments where it comes to transactions which are applied as well. What?
No, it was an oral commitment.
Yeah, meaning there's nothing. Nothing's happened yet.
In the case of the flax, though, you can view it differently. When the person gave the money in advance and you gave partial payment. How do you do the remainder of the transaction?
Very good, very
good. Do you transact that I already made the Kenyan and it's done? Or no, the Kenyan hasn't taken place yet, and I have a verbal commitment on the remainder. That's why the first part had to be paid
right.
up front.
Which is, that's the Kiddush exactly of Rav is saying that you can distinguish between the financial agreement
right.
and the verbal agreement.
Right, so that's what breaks it down. Or right. do we view it and say, no, that's a deposit. You really made the commitment, and now it's your obligation to fulfill the order at the old price.
I agree with you. I wonder, Rav is a Kiddush in and of itself. But you could even reverse from Rav and say maybe you can't even divide it up and then not even get to Rabbi Yochanan and say there's a problem. But nonetheless, Rav says this. Just la halacha on this particular point. The Shulchan Aruch says in Reish Dalad, in Choshen Mishpah Reish Dalad Zayin, I actually didn't put this in the notes, but the Gemara does say that this is how the Shulchan Aruch codifies this halacha. Just to bring a bottom line. Hanoisev and Noisem Bidvarim, a person who does transactions verbally, Bilvad, alone, Hareze Ro'ui Lo La'amod Bidvarim. It's very worthy for a person to stand by their word. Even though a person didn't actually pull out their wallet or their credit card, but Le Roshan Volinyach Mashkon didn't even place a collateral. But Kol HaChozer Boy, Bein Lokeach, Bein Moche, and whoever goes back, whether it be the buyer or the seller, Avo Pisha Eino Chayav Lekabel Im Mishapara, even though a person really isn't under the rubric of the Mishapara, right, the curse because of a financial commitment, Harezim Mechusar Amona, he is lacking in faithfulness, which means the Shulchan is passing like Rabbi Yochanan, like the Rif Paskins, and the sages don't look happily upon such an individual. Okay, so meaning in the end of the day, we do pass like Rabbi Yochanan, and a person should try to avoid this. Yes, I wanted to take this one step further into the realm of Machshav, and we'll close with this. I'd like to just do one or two very interesting sources which relate to this. One is the idea of the words of Rav Gustman. I actually want to thank Josh Flug has provided me with a number of these very interesting sources which are usually quite obscure to attain. And this is from Rav Gustman, who says in Kuchasay Shiurim, in source 14, I'd like to just start about halfway through the paragraph where it says Uve MS, the first one on the line. In source 14, he says, "Ve'emes in truth, yesh lahakshos, eizer shayachus yesh li sura dehain velav shel chatzedek shetzorich la'ames dibura leparshas mishkalos." He says, "Look, what we've done over here is there's been two parts of the shir. We've been talking about measures and owning measures, and honesty, and we've been talking about how you speak. But how does the Gemara just sort of lightly step between the two of them? How does words and honest dealings relate to each other?" Ve'yoser hayoshayach leparshas midvar sheker tirchak ve'kadaimer. The Gemara should have quoted not Hinshel Chatzedek. It should have said Midvar Sheker Tirchak. Don't lie. That's where the Gemara should have sourced this whole discussion we've been having. So he says Venir Elavayer Al Pi Ma Sheheviano Bekunchas Shirim Bamitzia. He quotes his own Shirim on Bamitzia. He says he's a B'Shem Achinuch Mishtan Reshit Nuches V'Hu Mitoras Kan Parshas Kedoshim. He quotes the Sifra. As we saw beforehand, a person who measures is called a judge. A person who changes his midos, he uses a dented or a limited measuring cup, has perverted justice. That's why a person's word, verbal commitment, is placed in this parsha. You are a judge when you speak, if you want to extend that further. That which means, and when you say, Bob, I'm going to give you something, words matter to the extent that you've actually created a psak din, so to speak. You've now created a judgment via your words that you're going to do something for him. Wow. So what's the contrast here I'm saying? Rav Gustman is saying, your words, it's so interesting because today Words are so frivolous. People say whatever they need to say in order to be able to get whatever they needed to get as fast as they possibly can. Says Rav Gussman, the way you speak is in fact the same level of judgment. Let's take this even further now. Now we're related to Rosh Hashanah. This is really fascinating. Really fascinating idea, because we're now in the section of time of Rosh Hashanah. So how does this relate to it? Because remember, this is about this. The Torah is essentially empowering us to be judges, whether it be the way we interact, what we own, or the way we speak. So the Al-Sheikh, Rav Moshe Al-Sheikh, says a very fascinating insight in Source 15. Is el inyan haksuvim yomar, ki hine yodanu ki b'riyom Rosh Hashanah, yamid hu yisporach b'mishpat kol yitzurei olam. We say this. Right, we say in Hayom Aras Olam, today is the judge day where all of creation stands in front of you, O God. V'oz yiktsov, or yaktsov, hu alakol ish v'ish parnasas shenasoi. We know that your budget is going to be set for the year on Rosh Hashanah. Whether it be financial, emotional, psychological, physical, everything's being set on that day. Your food is set up for you from year to year. That is when everything is going to be set up for you according to your actions for the year. Therefore, So now let's say you're going to now misuse your measures when you're making a transaction. Okay? So you have a certain amount allotted to you, and this person has a certain amount allotted to them, and you're now going to sort of say, well, you know, I know a little better, right? We're going to make an, you know, it's like, it reminds me, for those Roald Dahl fans, I don't know if you remember reading Matilda. You know, Matilda's dad, he's a secondhand car salesman, you know, and like, you know, like he'd reverse the odometer, you know, like all the different things he put sand and oil in the gearbox, all the different things he used to do. Like, nobody's ever going to worry about this, right? So like, in the end of the day, you know, you know better, right? You're going to make sure that, you know, you're going to get a good deal and everybody's going to be just fine off this. He says, "Haloi nimtzo oisim ovel b'mishpat ha'yadua." What's the justice you're perverting?
Rosh Hashanah.
That's what he says. Meaning, what's happened? God says one thing, and you said, "God, I know you got it all right, but you know I know better, right? I know you've sorted out everybody in the world, but I feel like I need to make a few adjustments here and there, just to make sure that everybody comes out clean." You know what they say about the fellow who goes up to heaven, and he comes up, and he's been the kind of guy who's always lived, you know, bitty avid lifestyle. There was always a shitter. Al yesh al mal yismo. So he arrives at the gates of heaven. They take him in a limousine, and he's going down. He's going down in Beverly Hills to 90210, and he's like, "Wow, this is unbelievable." And they say, "Well, we're not there yet." You know, they keep going. They're going through Beverly Wood. Like, okay, you know, the house is still worth a million. Yeah, it's fine. And they said, "No, we're not here yet." And they keep going. You know, goes past, you know, certain areas in Brooklyn, and he gets there. And at a certain point, he's getting, you know, Bedford Stuyvesant, and he gets to an alleyway where there's barely room for the limousine. He has to walk out. And there's a little, you know, basement level, one room apartment without lighting. And he says, "This is heaven?" And they said, "Yeah, well, there is a shitter." So, meaning to say, God says one thing, and what are you doing? Oh, well, God, you know. So, says the Al-Sheikh, what's the justice you're perverting? It's not so much that you're a Dayan, but it's that Hashem's the Dayan. And you're essentially saying, well, that doesn't work for me. That's what the problem is, oh yeah. That's a theological problem. This is not a societal problem. That's what the Al-Sheikh is saying. Meaning, as opposed to, let's say, regular law. Law is protecting society. What's happening over here is that we are violating heavenly law. In fact, the way that the Birkas Shimon says it, Rav Baruch Schneerson says this beautifully on the parashah. He says, on our parashah, he says, "Vanira dihine levada inyan me'oz b'moznei tzedek b'pshutai u'kamashmoi shelo l'shake b'minos v'voi limkor liknos machaberoi." Yesh gam inyan shel moznei tzedek. Wait, I'm sorry, I apologize, I didn't notice the time. Shel moznei tzedek b'mesha adam shoyke b'dato l'harichis atzmoi oyes chaveroi. Uvozeh azor ha-gudola lo rak shelo yishake b'mezit elo shelo yite es atzmoi b'nogel adavai. What's happening over here? When you're giving somebody else false, you're using the false measures, what are you doing? You're tricking yourself. You're perverting your way of... You think... That's kind of what the Al-Sheikh was saying. Is you believe that your reality, the illusion you've created in your reality, is the truth. And you're living in that bubble. That's what you're tricking. I'd like to end just with the following, and we're not going to read it inside. But there's a beautiful Kedusha slavey, Rabbi Levi Yitzhak of Berdichov, who says on this parasha, very interesting thing, and that is that there's two versions of the Gemara. When a person goes up to heaven, what are they going to ask you? One version of the Gemara says that the first thing they're going to ask is Nosata v'Natata b'Emuna. Did you honestly deal with other people? The other version of the Gemara is that did you make time for your Torah? So which is it? Which is the first question? Is it about your Torah learning or is it about your business dealing? So says the Kedushas Levi. Kedushas Levi says a very powerful thing. He says, when you're in your store, when you're in your business, when you're in your office, and somebody asks you for a deal, and they ask you to slip you a little extra, or let's make a deal, and there'll be kickbacks. He says that's a moment where you are expressing the Torah that you spent all those years learning. And if the test fails, then if you're not able to express what you learned in the study halls in the practical life, you're missing the boat of what you are doing in the study halls. It's wonderful to learn about these things, but ultimately, where the rubber hits the tarmac is in the office. And that, says the Kedushas Levi, is why the two questions are synonymous. Though they say that Rav Nachman of Breslov used to be asked, he used to say that many people eat in order to be able to learn Torah. He says, I learn Torah in order to be able to eat. Meaning, it only really comes to full fruition when it translates, it distills, and it expresses itself in the life that we lead. And that is what the Gemara is asking.
Someday we have a little time.